All right, so here's the deal. Doing the show for 16 years, and I've stayed away from this topic because it confuses me. And I have a hard enough time not looking like a putz anyway.
With your own faith.
with the stuff I know about. Yeah, I just don't even know. So I reached out and said, I wonder if we can get Denisha Prendergast to come into the show and talk about it. I don't know why all of a sudden I got my evening FM voice on.
Venus Flytrap.
She's a filmmaker. She's a human rights activist. She's a storyteller. And she's the granddaughter of somebody cool.
Somebody's
cool. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I wanted to go right. Thanks for bringing that up. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to go right there. What? You're swinging around here. I want to look at you. Come here.
Oh, all right.
Let's have a conversation.
All right. Let's do it.
So How come everyone goes on about your grandfather, but not your grandmother as much?
You know.
Why they do that?
That is such a great question, and it's a great way to start the interview. It's something that I have come to tackle over the past couple of years, trying to understand my space within this whole legacy. You know, being the eldest of my generation and also a female, and identifying that the image that the world has right now of Rastafari has been male. And that's so interesting because it was never just male. His Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie I, who is the root and the inspiration of the movement, he changed history in 1930 when he was crowned King of Ethiopia. He basically said that, I reject your crown if you will not crown my queen as balance beside me, as co-regent to run this country together.
Does everyone know that?
Yeah. Oh. But it's not a very... People don't talk about it very often, but to me, when I came upon that discovery again, it changed the whole dynamic of how I even interact with my grandfather's legacy, my family's legacy. You know, my grandma is unseen very often, but she is who I have personally known my entire life as the communicator of who we are supposed to be and who we have been. You know, my grandma was actually around my age when my grandfather transitioned. And I think about that, and it's crazy.
That is crazy, yeah.
Yeah, that is crazy that she had to inherit so much and become so much more. You know, so for me, within these days, whatever I do, I always give platform to my grandma, you know, because when you see my grandma, she is who I hope to become.
What about you reminds you of Rita Marley?
Oh, gosh. Where do we start? What about the smile? Let's start there. The smile. Yeah. My grandma has one of the hugest smiles and the hugest hearts. You know, I sacrificed my time building a career to move into activism. And that's also because I saw my grandma do it. My grandma put down her singing, put down that part of her effervescence to build schools, to build hospitals, to actually give truth and integrity to the legacy, to the dreams, to the visions of my grandfather. You know, so the music became much more than melodies and lyrics to me. The music has always manifested itself into a call to action, a mission. I don't see people who follow the reggae music as fans. I see them as parts of a movement, because reggae music has created the largest political party in the world, if you think about it. But sometimes we just keep partying, you know, and leave the politics out of it. So, yeah, when I see me, I see my grandma, because she made sure I was there to see. She made sure I was there to see.
When was, I don't know if I want to ask this. No, I'm going to ask. Sometimes when people have this pedigree, you know, they have this history, this family name, right? Sometimes it comes with a shadow, but other times it gets you out of things like speeding tickets.
Yeah.
Has ever come into play where you dropped the Marley connection and it's helped?
Well, I mean, yeah, definitely.
Really?
For sure, of course. Like, naturally, you know, people, once people know, people create a space to make things a little bit easier. You know, so I may not have to join a line because someone may recognize me. And not just because of the Marley, but also because of my work.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, and I give thanks for that. But there is one time when I think it played against me. It plays against me sometimes, too. Don't get it wrong. You know, Bob Marley's cool up until a point. Okay. Because your parents don't really want him to be the friend that you bring home.
Right.
You know what I'm
really?
Saying? What do you mean? Of course. Let's talk real. You know, Bob Marley, his music is cool, the culture is cool, but your parents just want it to remain that way. You know, they don't want you to bring too much of it into the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay, all right.
Exactly. You know, so.
When was the last time you were at the Pinnacle?
Last time I was at the Pinnacle was the last time I was in Jamaica.
Which was?
Maybe about 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Is it easy to get to?
It is easy to get to.
Is it a tourist thing yet?
It is not a tourist thing yet.
By the way, we should tell everyone what the heck we're talking about.
Yeah, man. So Pinnacle is the birthplace of the Rastafari movement, a geographical space that is located in St. Catherine, which is in Spanish Town, which is the old capital of Jamaica. Pinnacle existed in its full effervescence between 1937 and 1954, when the Jamaican government came in with military force and destroyed the community. At this point, the community was fully self-sufficient for the past 16 years, living off of farming, fruits, vegetables, sales of those to local business owners, and also the farming of ganja, which they use in medicinal ways and, you know, for cultural purposes.
Do you have to say that so people don't go, ooh, you guys were selling drugs?
No, I don't care. You know, if people want to say, oh, you guys are selling drugs, I mean...
Well, that's eventually happened, ignorance. Right? They got busted big time,
yeah,
twice.
Yeah, but, you know, all of that was a plan because, you know, your shirt right now says keep calm and decolonize. And
look at him.
Yeah, come on, son. And that's what was happening at that time. You're talking about a movement of ex-slaves who are creating a new model of existence that is proving itself to be sustainable even before this nation has been proclaimed independent. That's dangerous. You're talking about governance outside of this colonial system. They don't like that. So they have to find ways to destabilize it. You see, Alexander Bustamante, who eventually became the first premier of Jamaica, the first president, prime minister, he was the arch enemy of Leonard Howell.
Hmm.
And Leonard Howell is also known as the first Rasta. He's the one who purchased this property called Pinnacle. He moved across different plantations and told ex-slaves in which eventually became massive gatherings, like Marcus Garvey.
Hmm.
Think about Marcus Garvey moving across America and building this movement. The same thing was happening in Jamaica. And so Leonard Howell is moving across plantations, liberating the minds, the bodies, and the souls of ex-slaves and letting them know that there is a safe space up in the mountains where we can create our own model of existence that has nothing to do with this trauma, where we can heal and become everything that we want to be, who we are, to remember. Alexander Bustamante, at that time, was the head of what's known as the Bustamante Industrial Trade Union, which is basically the organization that accounts for all of the slaves. So he's noticing all of his numbers going down. Everybody's is leaving. His business is getting messed up. So eventually, when he does become the prime minister of Jamaica, one of his first intentions is to destroy this place, this model of governance that is presenting itself and liberating the people of Jamaica. They're making them too smart. They're making them too wise. They're taking them away from the direction where Babylon wants us to go.
Okay, hold on.
I know. It's a lot, huh?
Andrew's head's pretty small.
And what?
Andrew's head's pretty small.
Well, my attention span is small, but yeah. So let's start with Babylon. What is Babylon? Where is Babylon?
Babylon is... Babylon is no longer just a physical place.
Babylon, it used to be in, is that right?
Yeah, it used to be. It used to be in biblical times, a physical
right.
place. But,
no, but
Babylon
in
right now represents the idea of anything that oppresses human
right.
beings, that oppresses justice. that is what Babylon is. And so that's why I say Babylon no longer manifests in a physical space, because at one point we used to look at places like England as Babylon, and we still do. Because remember, England holds that history of enslaving so much of the world and still benefiting from the roots, benefiting from the fruits of that up to today, let's be real. You know, so that's why we say Babylon, but Babylon also exists in us as human beings, in our thoughts, in how we live, in how we decide not to do the right thing, how we decide to turn away, you know, how we perpetuate injustice in small and big ways. So that's what Babylon is.
What's the opposite of Babylon?
Zion.
And where's that?
Is where you want to create it. Again, Zion is no longer a geographical space. Like, the whole world is a crime scene right now. That's a line from Damian Marley's song.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah. The whole world is a big crime scene. You know what I mean?
So would Pinnacle have been considered a Zion?
Pinnacle would have been considered a Zion.
Okay.
You know, think about it. You're talking about being enslaved on a plantation to moving to a space where you create the way you want to exist. Your children are free to become anything they want to become. You're living like this for 16 years, fully self-sufficient. You've created a community, your own language, your own way of life. And then the colonial masters come in and destroy your home. And overnight, you're homeless. You're talking about hundreds of people. You're talking about destroying a community. So here we are in 2019. In 2014, I led a campaign called Occupy Pinnacle, because at that point, and still today, the Jamaican government is working with private developers to sell portions of the property and destroy it for commercial use, residential use. So what used to be 500 acres is now just about 100 acres of scattered land. Mm. There's no more space for us. So it's crazy how Jamaica, everything about Jamaica identifies with the colors of Rastafari, our music, our language, our identity, but doesn't give place for us to be and truly exist. The only Rasta they really like is Bob Marley. Full stop.
That's because he helped with tourism.
Yeah, that's because they used him for
tourism.
That's
what I meant. Sorry, that's a way better way to say it. See, I knew I was going to step on it.
Yeah, man, he didn't help. They used him. They stole him.
Right.
You know?
I don't know whether you realize this or not, Denisha, but I am a middle-aged, middle-class, awkward, ignorant white man when it comes to your world, your life, Rastafari, the whole thing, right? So I have read a bunch of stuff trying to get ready for today. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I was reading things and I went, hold on a second. You may not be a big fan of me. Not that you have to be a fan. That's not what I'm saying. But it kind of gave me the impression that you're suspicious of white culture. Are you? Are Rastafari – and by the way, hold on. Here's the other thing I learned. Mm-hmm. A Rastafari doesn't say Rastafarian. That term Rastafarian is like an outsider's term.
Right.
Is that true?
It is.
Okay, so I need to stop saying Rastafarian.
Yeah, and just
although,
say Rastafari.
Although I can still say it because I am an outsider.
Yeah, but it's okay. Once you know better, you do better. Right?
Okay. Well, sometimes. Yeah.
Write that down.
So,
okay, so when it comes to the Rastafari trajectory of its history, I'm a jerk.
Okay. All right.
Really? It's cool. Okay with that?
Yeah, we'll start where you need to. You know, each one teach one.
Wow.
That's a part of Rastafari culture. Each one teach one.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you want me to know?
I want you to know that Rastafari evolved out of a space of wanting to decolonize ourselves, wanting to create a new model of existence, like I keep saying. That's all. We just didn't want to go along with everything that Babylon was saying, because it didn't fit. We didn't fit into it.
Do you still feel oppressed?
Do I still feel oppressed? The whole world is oppressed right now. Don't you feel oppressed?
Not in the slightest.
Not in the slightest. Yeah, I definitely feel oppressed by the media.
The media?
Yeah, man. I feel oppressed by the food.
What do you mean the food?
Yeah. Do you know
Are you vegetarian?
Yeah, but I mean that's here or not there.
Do you know? But I thought, isn't that part of the Rastafari?
Yeah, that definitely is a part
of the earth.
Eat from the earth. Do you know any other people who farm any of the food that you're eating right now?
Yeah, me.
You? You're farming your own food?
Pretty. We got a little bit, and then we're gonna get more. And
that's amazing. That is amazing.
Can I be a Rastafari?
It takes more than that, though. You know. All right. Okay. Patience.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know that's what, when I say I'm oppressed by the food, meaning that it is in spaces like North America, in spaces like cities like these, it is hard for individuals to grow their own food. It is hard for us to find sustainable ways of living.
Sure, because you're living in concrete, so move away.
Yeah. So move away.
That's what I did.
Yeah, that's fine. But right now, I can't move away because if I move away, my ability to move forward to create a sustainable sustainable life within the scope of the world is non-existent. It's either or.
So are you saying that you feel, are we going to keep using the word oppressed? It's such a trigger word.
Is there
a better word?
Yeah, there is a better word.
What's the word? What is it?
I don't feel honored or respected as a human being.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if
by virtue of the way that corporate operates, by virtue of the way that policies don't protect the people first.
Yeah.
Policies seek to protect corporate interests first.
Yes.
So
since you worded it like that, yes, we all have some oppression going on.
And that's exactly that's one of the points of Rastafari, to remind people that we're still living in a warfare. Like, the reason why we can use all of these electronics right now is because somewhere in Africa is being destroyed so that the minerals that are necessary to manufacture these things are being reaped, harvested. You know what I'm saying? So let us not overlook that just because we're in a safe space here.
Hold on, I got to remind everyone what's going on here. I'm just sitting here chatting away like I don't have a radio show. Denisha Prendergast, hardest name of any guest I've ever had on my show in 16 years.
Preach.
Prendergast, that's her last name. She's a filmmaker. She's a human rights activist. She's a storyteller, and she's a granddaughter of Bob and Rita Marley. And her website is iamdenisha.com. Let's just change gears a second here.
Yep.
What were you doing at 7 o'clock this morning?
I was on my way home at 7 o'clock this morning from set. So I'm also an actress. I actually started out in this creative world acting. It's a Canadian feature-length film. A writer is Charles Officer, writer-director. Co-writer is Motion. She's one of the foundations.
Did you say Motion?
I did say
That's
Motion.
That's a person's name?
Yeah.
How awkward am I?
Yeah.
You've already explained earlier, so
Motion.
Yeah, her name is Motion. I mean, we take on identities, right? Her name is Motion. Keep things in motion. She's one of the foundation. Actually, she's a Canadian as well. She's a foundation female in the hip-hop movement here. So okay. you should know that name.
Okay.
And
you rapped at 7?
No, we rapped at 7, but they've been rapping. They rapped at 8 yesterday. Like it's been hard. It's production, you know? Yeah, so I made my way here. I made a promise. When I realized, I was like, oh my gosh, how could I do this? I double booked, but I made it.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
And I want to apologize for all the bad stuff I said about you earlier.
That's all good. It was really the rain that delayed, you know.
Blame it on the rain? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, blame it on the rain.
If you weren't, well, hold on. Oh my goodness, so many questions. So in doing the research and the Rastafari stuff, I phoned so many people and talked to so many people and emailed so many people. And one of the reasons it's taken me 16 years to get around to this topic is because there are so many mansions.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
You did.
Which means like denominations within the Rastafari movement. Or yeah. Do I say movement? It's not a movement.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yes?
Go ahead.
Well, I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah.
Two for two, Drew.
Thank you. And I didn't know. So you phone one group of people and they go, well, yeah, we think this, but they don't think that and they're wrong and we're right. And I was like, oh, man, I just didn't know where to go with this.
And no, it's kind of like, you know, Catholicism and Presbyterian.
Yeah, it's like all the other religions in the world.
Isn't it?
But is it a religion?
All have different ideas of how to manifest. Yeah. Some people identify it as a religion. Some people identify within it as a culture.
So it's like Judaism in many ways.
It is, actually. It's very similar to Judaism. People make that comparison very often. So, you know, it, like I said, Rastafari came as a response to colonialism. Start from there. We wanted to be what we wanted to be, and this is how we identified ourselves and how His Majesty comes into it, Ethiopia.
Hold on. How do you say his name? Haile?
Haile Selassie. Yeah, Haile Selassie the First, which also means the power of the Trinity. Haile, the power, Selassie, Trinity.
Who named him that? His parents?
No, it's a title that is given.
That was given to him. Okay.
Yeah, so when he was crowned, his birth name is Makonnen Tafari. Okay, we're coming closer now. His birth name is Makonnen Tafari.
Wait, does Ras mean prince?
Ras means head.
Head?
Yes, like duke of...
Oh, right. Yeah, he is
head.
Okay.
And Tafari means creator. So when Makonnen Tafari was named Ras, given the title of Ras, the identity of his name became head creator, which is what the movement took on.
Was he human?
What?
Was he human? Was he like, when it comes to Jesus, people go, well, Jesus was human and he was God. And most people's brains go, what? That doesn't make sense. So was...
Yes, he was definitely human.
Was he also God?
For many people, he was also God. And within the context of the time that the movement was birthed, I can understand why. Because you're talking about an oppressed people who don't have a God. The God that they are being prescribed doesn't look like them, and they don't remember far enough about who they are because so much has been stripped away from them. So when this has been presented to them and it is resonating around the world, you have a man named Marcus Garvey who is moving across the world uniting millions of black people. He prophesied and he said, look to the east for the crowning of a black king and queen, and black people, you will know that your redemption is near. And shortly after that, Haile Selassie and Empress Menen, Haile Selassie's wife, were crowned king and queen of Ethiopia.
I should have brought her up again as well.
It's okay. And, I mean, the ripples that this sent through the colonial world and the anti-colonial world were intense. You're talking about the image of an African king being crowned in colonial times, with colonial masters from all around the world coming to recognize this. This had never happened before.
Okay.
So I'm trying to give you a little bit of context.
Oh, no, yeah, this is good. I mean, seriously, this is... you are able to drop this so that, like, a hockey player would understand it.
Yes, and this is why I came here.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. It's important for us to learn more about each other, you know?
No, was he also referred to as Lion of Judah?
The Lion of Judah, the conquering Lion of Judah. Yeah. So his title is really long. King of Kings, Lord of Lords, conquering Lion of the tribe of Judah. Yes, my grandfather says it in many of his songs.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. No, I mean, it sounds familiar because that's what they call Jesus.
What, conquering Lion?
No. King, Lord of Lords,
Messiah. And then here comes conquering Lion of the tribe of Judah.
So there's also a Christian, the Judaism.
No, you don't have to say, you hate to say it, because his Imperial Majesty was an Orthodox Christian.
Okay.
Yeah, he was an Ethiopian Orthodox Christian.
Yeah, Ethiopia was steeped in Christianity for thousands of years.
Exactly. And so the Rastafari movement also is a branch of that. It's just that we don't identify exactly with what it is that the colonial masters define as Christianity, because Ethiopia had its own version of Christianity long before that. So this is our search to come back to ourselves.
What do you think?
so many. Just
what do you think of Jesus?
I don't really think of him, to be very honest with you.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, that's my truth. I don't really think of him. The name is ever present. Like, I grew up in the church. My father is Catholic. You know, so, like, I know what it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't ascribe to any of this religious ideology that's out there in the world. I just live and I be a good human being.
Based on what?
Based on...
Like, how do you define good?
well, if it's good for the earth, if the earth will grow and breathe from it, if other humans will grow and breathe from it and heal from it, then it must be good.
Ooh, I like, that's actually one of the best answers. Because normally when I ask that, it gets into things like absolute truth.
No, right? It's too hard to fight in conversations about absolute truth.
Well, because you're fighting so many other things.
And
so.
Everyone has their own fight that they're fighting, you know? So that's why we have to respect each other where we are and try not to impose on each other, which is why I say, you know, I've traveled so much. Like, I've been all around the world and I've seen how people identify with their own ideas of religion that has nothing to do with Jesus. They've never even really heard the name.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I give thanks for that insight so I can say something like, I don't really think about Jesus. Like, I don't really think about Buddha. You know, like, I just live and I be a good human being every day.
I don't think about Trump.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't get her started.
Sorry, did I put Jesus, Buddha, and Trump in the same sentence?
You did. Oh, gosh. The Holy Trinity.
Wow, you just earned a place in hell for
thank
that
you,
one.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
Okay, I found some stuff on the BBC website that's tried to summarize Rastafari.
Okay.
And I think they maybe got some things wrong.
Definitely.
Really?
I don't even have to ask. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Number one, Haile? Is that how you say his name? Haile Selassie?
Selassie.
Selassie. The first is the living God.
Yes. Rastafari, okay. I do say that.
The black person is the reincarnation of ancient Israel, who at the hand of the white person has been exiled in Jamaica.
Oh, yes, you have some Rastafari who do say that.
Okay. The white person is inferior to the black person.
Yeah, you do have some people who say that. I don't personally believe that. Right. I believe that we all have our own capacities.
Okay. Jamaica is hell, Ethiopia is heaven. I don't know what that means. Use your words.
Yeah,
what?
I mean,
what does it mean? Is that right?
You know how they always say the grass is greener on the other side. You know, and you're talking about the people who have been stolen away from their homeland and brought to a foreign land and don't necessarily have access to go back home.
Right.
So
they hear about Ethiopia,
right,
and
their dreams, their aspirations, you know,
got
so
it.
Like, you know.
Okay. The invincible emperor of Ethiopia is now arranging for expatriated persons of African origin to return to Ethiopia.
No, he didn't arrange for that. What His Majesty did was that he granted Africans in the West 500 acres of land, a space called Shashamani, which has become inhabited by Africans in the West. So there has been a movement of repatriates to this land that His Majesty granted. So he didn't necessarily organize for it to happen. He just created a space for it to happen.
By the way, this stuff has been found in what is described as a definitive list in this book, 1977 book, The Rastafarians, The Dreadlocks of Jamaica, by Leonard Barrett. Ever heard of him?
No.
Okay. Number six, in the near future, blacks shall rule the world. Do some Rastafarians believe that?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. Then the beliefs, that's like, so, hold on. Early beliefs, there was, like, this is where I'm going with that sort of hatred of whites thing.
Yeah, well, I mean.
So would you, if you came across
a Rastafari. Rastafari.
Oh, I'm so awkward.
It's okay.
If you came across a Rastafari who was going on about hating whites, would you go up to him and go, or her, and go, chill? Like, come on. What are you on about?
No,
this is ridiculous.
I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't engage it like that. Because, okay, this information that you have right here. The movement was born in 1930. That's why I keep giving you historical context of the time that it was born as a response to colonialism.
Right.
Which at this time was, and still was, being pushed forward by people with white skin of European descent. So many of
So in that context, this stuff makes sense.
And that is what the context that we must look at this stuff. Within the context of colonialism, a response to colonialism. So another thing that I must note is that two of His Majesty's best friends were white. And because of them, they helped to document a lot of his history, his words, and save them. Because when Ethiopia was invaded by the Derg and His Majesty was overthrown, they destroyed, the first things that they destroyed were the libraries. They tore down all of his statues. It became illegal to say his name. And any kind of propaganda about him was destroyed and it became illegal. They were able to preserve that stuff in England. And so much of the readings, the writings that we have as, of His Majesty.
What's it holding? What is that? You're holding up a...
No, this is my personal notebook.
Oh.
I'm just dramatic.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
She's an actor.
Yeah. Yeah, but many of the writings are written by them.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, this race thing is so interesting, but it is a very important thing for us to tackle because... You know, this idea of white privilege, and if you could give me some space to talk about it, it would be good. White privilege, I think, is no longer a useful term. It's not a useful term. What it is that people with white skin have no emotional insight into what it's like living in black skin. Is it really as simple as that, and vice versa?
Yeah, but people want a quicker way to say that, so they call it white privilege.
Yeah, but because I'm intelligent, I'm not trying to find a fast way to say it. I'm trying to have a conversation because it's important.
Yeah.
You see, last year I was in America, and I was after spending 3 days at a festival and staying at someone's
Airbnb.
Yes, a white lady across the street saw us putting stuff in the car and called the police. She didn't wave to say hi. She didn't come to interface. She saw three young black people and a white person putting stuff in the car, and she called the police and she said she saw three black people stealing stuff. So, you know, that's still the reality of living in black skin in the 21st century, unfortunately.
I would never understand that. That would never happen to me.
Like the lady who called the police because there were black people barbecuing in a park.
Yeah.
It was like a year and a half, 2 years
ago. Or the guy, the lady who called the police on a 12-year-old in the park playing with a toy gun. And the police came and killed him in the space of 2 seconds. Ooh. And it was a toy gun. Mm-hmm. And it was the manufacturer's fault why it wasn't identified as such. So who do we hold accountable in these moments?
Yeah, do you hold the lady who called or do you hold the police? Who are you more bugged with?
No, I hold all of them accountable. I hold the lady accountable for not waving. She said they didn't say hi, but we were busy. We didn't even see you, lady. This is your community. Mm-hmm. If you come and say hi. You know, that's your responsibility. It's not our responsibility to feel like, maybe we should say hi just to be safe. But that's not fair.
But how did you feel with the popo? Because
I was annoyed. I mean,
I saw the video and you guys were chilled with the cops. You were so good with them.
Yeah, because I'm a director. So, I know how to manage high drama.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you were de-escalating and just keeping it all chill,
pretty
right?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, but
at inside,
the same time,
were you fired up?
Of course, no, but also I'm fired up in that video because I say to them, listen, I have shit to do. Mm-hmm. And I use those terms. I have shit to do. My grandmother is waiting on me. Mm-hmm. So you guys, you need to hurry up whatever it is that you guys are doing. So when the police came out of the vehicle, first of all, we're surrounded by...
I know, was there four or five?
No, there were seven police cars that first came. No sirens, silent, prepared to execute. Let me just make it clear. They were prepared to execute. See? So when they come out of the car and they're pointing into our vehicle, hands up, hands up. Everybody hands up. Everybody put their hands up. Except for me. Because you're crazy. And you're stupid. And this is unbelievable. So when he comes around to my window, I have to tell him nicely, no, I'm not going to put my hands up. Are you serious? We're checking out of our Airbnb. And in that moment, he realized that, And so I realized that, okay. And I turned to my assistant and I said, please turn on the camera. And she's like, what? Are you sure? And I said, as a matter of fact, all cameras live. And I told him I'm going to step out of the car now. Because I know my rights. And you see, because I'm a director, like I say, I know how to manage sets. And you're in a costume right now and you're looking to create a scene. Is that what's happening here? All right, cool. We got it. And you know, when I look back at the situation, because it took me a while to look back because I was busy. I was doing things. Like, I'm doing an international project right now, raising funds to build a high school in Ghana and renovate a high school in Jamaica. Like, I was busy. It took me a while to realize that I could have almost really lost my life. Mm. Like, everything is okay now. So people are able to say, yeah, well, nothing happened to you. You're right. Thank God, huh? Mm. Exactly. This is one of the only cases. You know what I'm saying? At 4 a.m. that morning, we came in and we didn't have our key. The host had left the key for us outside. So we came in with our phone lights, mm-hmm. looking for the key outside at 4 a.m. What if it was at that moment that the neighbor decided to call the police?
And the police showed up then, yeah. How would that go down?
Exactly.
Holy cow.
So, you know, let us not forget.
Is the Rastafari...
I know.
Jesus people should be known as peacemakers based on the teachings of Jesus until it comes to religious uppity-ups, until religion becomes the priority. You know, that's when Jesus lost his mind, when he lost his mind with the religious people. So when it comes to Rastafari, what should you be known for? Peace? You know, like everyone goes on about the one love thing, right? So are you guys like pacifists or not?
No, there's no way that we can be pacifists.
No, not with the history that you've just dropped on
exactly.
us. There's no way.
No, we're peaceful.
Or is
but we're
that
not
the way?
Pacifists. No, we are peaceful.
Yeah.
But like my grandfather says, we will fight if we find it necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, he also says, I didn't come here to fight flesh and blood. I came here to fight spiritual wickedness in high and low places. That's the Babylon that I'm talking about that manifests in our actions, mm-hmm. in who we are today. You know, so Rastafari must not be known as a people who are pacifists, no. We're practical, we're peaceful, we're revolutionary, but we're evolutionary. You know, we're not trying to stay in these same systems that were never created for us in the first place. Everybody else may want to be just a sheep, but we want to be the shepherds. Let's find a different route, a different journey. You know, so it's interesting because some of the greatest wars in the world were started by Christians. And yet still, you know, Christians call themselves a peaceful people. But when a homeless man comes into the church, nobody wants to sit beside him. You know, so mm-hmm. we don't have to go into those.
Oh, no, we do. And we do regularly in this
for
show.
Sure.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a waste of time sometimes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, His Majesty says, we must become something for which we have never been. Overcoming petty prejudices to achieve the ultimate allegiance, which is not to nations, but to humans. We must become bigger and greater in outlook, something for which our environment and education have ill-prepared us. We must become members of a brand new race. And that is Rastafari. So you don't really need to search too much further. Start with the words of His Majesty, then you will understand the character within which we speak.
Boom.
Silenced.
No, that's yeah. It's knowledge that is the problem, because I remember from MASH, the TV show, there's this moment where if people sat down and had dinner together, then
trust me, it would be so much easier. But people are so afraid of each other. It's because we're afraid of ourselves. We live in fear. You know, and the more that we can grow to be more confident and loving within ourselves, it will be easier to be like this. You know, like, that's so easy. This is so easy.
You're so uncomfortable right now, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, I know myself. You know?
Yeah. The question is, how do we let go? I've always wondered that when it comes to hand grabbing. Who lets go? Do I make a move? And then what if you hang on more? And
no.
Then,
well, do you see, if it's genuine,
yeah,
then you'll know when. Because the energy will tell you.
Well, I guess we're staying here for a while then.
All right, let's do it.
Play some music and dance.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Which is greater in you? Your protesting stuff? That's not even a real word. But
activism.
That's the word I meant, activism. Your activism or your Rastafari?
Yeah.
I know they're interchangeable, but one rises up more.
Well, you know, I am Rastafari by virtue of how I was raised, how I live, you know. I am an activist because the world demands it. It was never an aspiration.
Which,
it was never
okay, let me rephrase it. Which
become.
One would you rather be known? If you had to pick one to be known for, being an activist or being a Rastafari, which one?
Oh, I don't do either or because I manifest as is necessary. So I can't do either or.
Okay, so she first of all, I keep saying she like she's not in the room. Denisha scares me a little bit. And she reminds me of a friend of mine, Sayeda Baba Taliba.
Oh, yeah.
Who's that?
She is a singer, actress.
Powerhouse.
She's a powerhouse, yeah, mm. Yeah, in Toronto. Her mom won the Order of Canada. She was like Canada's jazz queen.
Oh, awesome.
And you two in the same room would not, it'd be thermonuclear.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, you guys need to meet. That's for sure.
Well, make that happen. Make it happen.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why I brought that up. Other than it's this powerful woman thing that it discombobulates me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling threatened or anything. I just go like I admire it so much that I then question why I admire it so much. Mm-hmm. What does that say about me that when a strong woman, a strong, articulate, beautiful woman comes into the room and lays it out, that I go. What does that say about me? Let's turn it around to me.
Think about Drew.
You know, there are magical moments in this world that we are able to be a part of that sometimes don't necessarily have words immediately, you know? So it may not be you. It's just a moment that you find yourself to be a part of.
Can I, let's get to the Rastafari thing for a second here. Can I become one?
Can you?
Yeah.
Can you become one?
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
I don't know. Can well, I? Like, what do I got to do?
Based on the information that I've shared with you,
yeah.
You know, could you become one?
No, that's a good point. Okay, let me think that through for a second. No, because I was never oppressed. Mm. You have to be an oppressed person in order to become a Rastafari, I think.
Yeah. Well, yes. Not you don't. Well, actually, you are probably an oppressed person.
Everybody is. We already said that earlier.
Yes,
but
yes.
I mean,
yeah, because here's the thing. It's not just black people who identify as Rasta.
Yeah, but how many posers do you guys have?
You have lots, but even you have black people who pose too. You know, people who are responding to Rastafari are humans who are responding to Rastafari. Rastafari just started in Jamaica as a response to colonialism, but the world is still responding to colonialism. And Jamaica just inspired that response. So let us look at Rastafari as a response to colonialism. And from that perspective, it will better enable you to answer that question. Like, do you feel the effects of colonialism still?
No.
If not, then there will probably be no real interest or journey for you towards Rastafari.
Yeah, but what about the others? What about the cool stuff? I like the cool stuff.
That's cool.
I want to eat from the earth. I want to... I can't smoke weed, though. I get
that's
sick.
That's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I do. I get sick all the time.
That's unfortunate.
Well, not all the time. It sounds like I smoke all the time. But whenever I, whenever I've had it, I get... Anyway. Why? Is that a thing? You have to be able to do that?
No,
you
don't. Oh. Okay. So let me simplify it then. Instead of talking in all of these terms. You don't have to smoke ganja to be Rasta. You don't have to wear dreadlocks to be Rasta. You don't have to eat vegetarian to be Rasta.
You'd have one Marley album, though.
No.
Ziggy.
You don't. Yeah, you don't have to be a Marley fan to be Rasta.
Any of them.
Bob Marley is just the most popular Rasta man. He's not the definitive
bunny.
Rasta man.
You got to get Steven. Some bunny in here.
What about Stevens album?
Yeah, definitely have to have a Uncle Steve in the catalog.
Okay.
Come on. Yeah. But Rastafari, I mean, those things are superficial. Because at the end of the day, the man who started Rastafari, quote unquote, Leonard Howell, looked more like you. He was bald-headed.
Whoa.
Exactly. He wasn't bald-headed, but he wore low hair. He never wore dreadlocks.
Okay.
At one point, he gathered the members of the community and had everyone cut each other's hair in ceremony simply because Babylon was starting to identify us now because of our hair, and he didn't want Babylon to identify us. But as the community was destroyed, people got sent all over the place, and with that inspiration, people started to manifest in their own ways. So now you have the birth of different mansions of Rastafari.
12 Does that
tribes
bug
of
you?
Israel. No, why would it bug me? Because people have different lives, and people identify differently.
Yeah.
You know, so it can't.
But wouldn't it be better if it was one love?
It would.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I did. It's okay. Yeah.
You're good, Drew.
Yeah. It would be, but then also it would be so monotonous.
Ooh, that's true.
Exactly. You know, it would be so monotonous. Like, we can't all be the same. That would be so. No, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
We have to be true to who we are and how we feel. So you will even find individuals moving through different mansions of Rastafari to see what works best for them. It's just like people who move through different versions of Christianity to see what works.
It could be different movements of political movements. Look
how
civil rights movement in the States changed so much.
Exactly. You know, so we must evolve. You know, so it's not as hard as we think it is. And I think people are distracted from Rastafari and misunderstand Rastafari also because of the music. Because people think that Rastafari is limited to just the music, but the music was inspired.
Like, I'm a dope, and I don't even think that.
You do. You just told me that you like the cool things. You don't know if you.
But
could
I didn't name the music as the cool thing.
But what is the cool? What are the cool things?
I thought maybe the dope was the cool thing.
That's one cool thing. What else is cool?
See?
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. Okay. You know. So that's why these conversations are important.
How is your grandma?
She's all right.
Because she's 70-something.
Yeah, she's about to be 73. Yeah, she's doing all right.
She's still singing?
No, she's not singing right now. She had she had a few strokes. So she's not singing so much anymore.
So Rita Marley has had a few strokes.
Yeah, that's for a while now.
You know who else had a stroke last year? Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard him talk publicly? Is he communicating? I heard he was struggling a little bit with his communication. Mm. Don't anything? But no. Why, are you guys not cool with each other? You, with this?
No.
What?
No.
Bunny Will. What? You're not tight? You don't hang out?
No.
No. I don't know.
I don't know. No. I don't, you know? Bunny, yeah. Let's just stay politically correct.
You're
There's
funny. Some baggage there somewhere.
I guess I just stepped in it. That's the bonus of being ignorant. What? So there's Steven.
Yeah.
There's Ziggy.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom, Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
She's done some modeling or acting and stuff too, is she not? Because she's glamorous like you. So what has she done?
I guess when she was younger. But, I mean, she's been touring Ziggy Marley and the Melomakers since she was 13 years old.
Really?
Yeah. And then she started having kids in her 20s. And then she got to her 30s and they came off of the road. So, she created an educational institution. She manifests in other ways now.
Who's the one that's the businesswoman with the fashion and the...
That's
and she's
Sidella.
Running the label and...
Mm-hmm.
What's her name?
Sidella. That's Auntie Sidella. Yeah.
That's a force to be reckoned with
there. Okay, you better recognize. Okay?
I thought about sending her an invite to maybe join us on the show, and I thought with you and her, no. No way.
It would have been a lot harder to reach to her because you have many
levels.
People to get through. I am more accessible on purpose.
Yeah. Well, I like that. And you're kind of Canadian,
Yeah, you guys can claim me if you want to. I would understand.
Oh, I'm claiming you.
Yeah, it's cool.
That just sounded weird, didn't
it? Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, the colonized thing. Let's back off.
Stepped in it again. All right, tell. Let's finish with this documentary that you were in, because that's how I found you.
Rasta Soul's Journey.
Miss Scarlett.
Patricia Scarlett. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you heard her voice? I heard we did the phone thing. I was like, that is a crazy. She's got crazy vocals.
Oh, my gosh. Trust me. And she's an amazing woman. She's like your favorite aunt.
Yeah?
Your favorite aunt who drinks tea on Sundays and is down to talk about anything.
Nice.
Yeah. Such an amazing mentor.
So the doc was called what again?
Rasta, A Soul's Journey.
And can people still watch that somewhere, somehow?
It's actually going to be available on DVD this year.
Okay.
So I know DVD is kind of a thing that is going out.
How do you spell that?
But D, that's D, D, V, okay.
Divd.
Yeah, divd.
We call it divd.
Just Google it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, but it's almost like a collector's item. Oh, yeah, for sure. We went to 8 countries around the world to learn about the roots and the evolution of Rastafari. I was like maybe 23 or 24 at that time. It's like about 10 years ago.
I want to finish the interview with me saying something.
Yes. Do it.
This is such a horrible admission. First of all, thank you for coming here.
For sure.
The reality is, would I have invited you if you weren't a Marley? Probably not.
Yeah, I know.
But since watching some stuff that you've done and listening to you, and of course, now that you've been in the house, I'm trying to be so cool.
It's pronounced hizzle.
Right. Now that you've been in the studio for as long as you've been here, you're so much more than that name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
It's okay, and so is Rastafari. So give thanks for creating this space for me to speak a little bit about Rastafari in parallel to my family's legacy, to give some more context to the listeners out there that we're not as different as we think we are, you know? We're all responding to Babylon in our own ways.
You're killing me here with this stuff, man. Okay, we got to stop. hang on a second. Thank you for listening to that, because that was a highlight for me. And I don't have many highlights anymore. I don't have any hair, so I can't have any
no highlights without hair.
Denisha Prendergast is who we've been chatting with. She's a filmmaker. She's a human rights activist. She's a storyteller. Great communicator. You need to TED Talk this somehow, some way. And granddaughter of Bob and Rita Marley, and daughter of Sharon, and it goes on and on and on. IamDonisha.com. Check her out online.